responsibility for reining them in and bringing them to justice, all nations will participate since they reside the world over. They are called Illuminati, elite, proponents of the New World Order. They oppose everything that is God and truth. They are of the line that was disinherited 2,000 years ago. Everything they have built over the centuries, the wealth they have accumulated, the power they have established, the poisoning of the masses, the destruction of the earth and mankind, we will undo through the authority that has now been delegated to us. Visit our website at unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILING them.com. The message of his kingdom.
Taylor, to stand back here, I guess, this afternoon is a pretty big, and I just want to comment. I do not have anything to say about the ads that are put on during my programs here on Genesis, other than to say that I do have a few advertisements of my own, and some of the advertisements are very good, but certainly we do not necessarily endorse any of the advertisements that they have. But some of them, something I think, are well worthwhile. Under any circumstances, let's get back to our guest today, William Grigg, who's been basically talking about the descending economic storm. What people don't understand is that General Motors and Ford and Chrysler are on the verge of bankruptcy, and they're the three largest, industrial producers we have here. And of course, you can get into so many of our other corporations. They've just left the United States. They've opened offices in China or India or Malaysia, Thailand, Mexico. And of course, there's no way that our workers can possibly compete with the workers in China or Thailand or Malaysia or Mexico who work for 20 cents on the dollar of the American salaries. And what most people do not understand is that GM and Ford are already building their plants in China and Thailand and Malaysia because that's where they're going to shift their production. But they're not going to tell the American people that the automotive industry is gone forever from the United States, other than, of course, the Japanese, not cars that are going to be manufactured here, under Japanese control. So pick up the story there.
The real outrageous aspect of the story, the really outrageous aspect, I think, is the fact that a lot of this is being done through subsidies that are directed to these corporations by the federal government, where the U.S. taxpayer is essentially paying and indemnifying the corporate policies that are moving the production of these automobiles and other assets of the industrial economy overseas. GM, for instance, started doing this way back in the 1980s, the late 1980s, during the second Reagan administration, the second term of the Reagan administration, better put. They started moving plant and assets into China on the assumption that they would someday be moving pretty much their entire production, their production over to China, and that's something that's going on right now. And absent the involvement of these subsidies that are encouraging the offshoring of production to places like China as well as to places like Mexico. It all started, as a matter of fact, with the relocation of production to Canada back in the 1960s. Absent the taxpayer involvement by way of subsidies extorted from the taxpayer and given over to these corporations, I don't think that the process would have moved with quite so much alacrity, although the ruination being visited upon our economy by the Federal Reserve, particularly in the last several decades, has done a great deal to encourage this as well. I mean, good grief. General Motors, during the first decade, or the first years of this decade, rather, was running as one of its few profit centers. This is supposedly General Motors, an automobile manufacturer, the bellwether automobile manufacturer for the economy. Indeed, the bellwether corporation for the U.S. economy, the bluest of blue chips on the markets. It got that way by manufacturing and selling cars, but it got into the mortgage loan business along with everybody else because of the policies that were being devised by the Federal Reserve to pump money and liquidity, which is to say, counterfeit money, credit created out of nothing, into that sector of the economy. And so for the first 4 or 5 years of the first decade of the 21st century, you had General Motors basically using its mortgage lending in order to subsidize its failing automobile production, which is a really good example of the type of distortions and malinvestments you get with an engineered bubble of this sort. And now that the bubble has collapsed, as you correctly pointed out, Dr. Stan, the big three are on the very precipice of bankruptcy, and indeed the secondary markets that all feed off of these major corporate tentpoles of the economy are all doing very badly. I mean, you can see how a lot of places where you have restaurant chains and also shopping malls that are shutting down because the retailers are starting to go out of business. I see that Steak and Ale and Berrigan's, which are the type of relatively modest but reasonably upscale restaurants that that more or less cater to people who would be working in the type of well-paying jobs that the big three would produce, they just filed for bankruptcy over the last day or so. They're going to be going out of business before the end of the summer, most likely. And a lot of the relatively upscale, middle-class-oriented retail clothing stores as well are starting to go into bankruptcy. And this is the sort of thing that happens when you have a depression. It tends to feed upon itself, and people start cutting back, first of all, on luxuries and then on some of the more extravagant amenities that may be necessary, and eventually they become very austere, knowing that times have gone tough. They stop spending. They certainly stop borrowing. It's an intelligent thing to do that, by the way. I mean, this is intelligent economic behavior. When you see that money is growing tighter and it's more difficult to service debt and you can't get credit, obviously you're going to have to reduce your expenditures and adjust your lifestyle accordingly. And there are a number of stories just in the wire services over the last couple of days that illustrate that people are acting intelligently that way. There was a piece in yesterday's New York Times headlined, "Worried Banks Sharply Reduce Business Loans." It said that banks that are struggling to recover from multi-billion dollar losses on real estate are curtailing loans to American businesses, depriving even healthy companies of money for expansion and hiring. Two vital forms of credit used by companies, commercial and industrial loans from banks and short-term commercial paper not backed by collateral, collectively dropped almost 3% over the last year. Now that, of course, is to be expected. That's the sort of behavior that one would expect from both lenders and borrowers. There was a piece in this morning's wire services, a CNN piece, that said that there's a study out saying some Americans cut credit card use. Of course, people should not be using credit cards to begin with. That's really what con artists would call a mug's game. It's a sucker play. But people, of course, have become addicted to this short-term form of quite frankly, Shylockian borrowing and debt called credit cards. If you take a look at the origin of the credit cards, in literature back in the 1800s, in the book Looking Backward by, I believe his name was Edward Bellamy.
Edward Bellamy, right.
Yeah, Edward Bellamy devised the idea of the credit cards back in, I believe, 1878, 1888, talking about this future society that would be cashless, that would be a collectivist society. He actually foretold something akin to the North American Union that we've been talking about, other plans to merge the United States with Canada and Mexico and other nations of the Western Hemisphere into this unitary state that will be operated on socialist or corporatist principles. That's actually a vision that Edward Bellamy talked about in Looking Backward, along with the invention of the credit card. He's the guy who invented the expression credit card.
In fact, let me just point out that the exact quotation was, "And a credit card will be just as good in Europe as gold once was." Now, that was 1882. How did he know? Well, I think it's all been planned long ago.
And they've certainly been, they've been circulating these ideas because they're just really a finite number of ways that you can lead an entire population carefully into slavery. And so it stands to reason that if you get people so overextended here and indebted to the government-run, as I like to call it, fictional reserve banking system, that's one of the most effective ways of doing it. And the CNN piece talks about the fact that credit card use has gone down considerably, which it, of course, should go down that direction in light of what's going on with the prevailing economic circumstances. But by the same token, just this morning, there was news about how the Federal Reserve is seeking to break through what it calls the credit clogs, according to the Associated Press, focused on getting the nation's credit gears smoothly working again. The Federal Reserve is letting Wall Street firms draw emergency loans into next year and giving financial companies more options to help them overcome credit problems. The Fed's announcement on Wednesday marks its latest effort to get credit, the economy's oxygen, flowing more freely. A global credit crisis that erupted last August has hobbled the U.S. economy, already reeling from a housing meltdown. But, of course, that's not the real problem with the economy, is a shortage of credit. The real problem with the economy is an excess of debt that has been generated in large measure because of the adulteration of our currency and the strip mining of our industrial plan, the fact that we have to have foreigners service our debt and our trade shortfalls. That's one of the biggest systemic problems with the economy. Debt is the obverse of credit. You cannot have credit without debt. Every time I get a solicitation in the mail to get a new credit card or get a revolving loan or get other kinds of short-term credit, we're at the very end of this great chain of credit. you know, the first people to get it are the people who get to use the inflated money first. They're, of course, the government and the people who are plugged in at the top in the investment markets. By the time it gets down to us, of course, the terms are nowhere near as favorable, and the so-called money that we've received would be nowhere near as valuable. But every time we get a solicitation or an offer that sort in the mail, I bring it in and I show it to my family and say, hey, look, we got another offer to get some more debt. You know, come get more debt. That's how it works. The people are being led to believe that that is what keeps the economy going, is credit and debt. You know what? That's true. But it's true in a sense that most people don't understand. I mean, it's leading us more deeply into bondage. That's not the way to wealth and prosperity. That's the way to bondage and a reduction to utter peonage. In the entire history of human civilization, there has never been a society that has grown genuinely wealthy through indebtedness. You grow wealthy through productivity, you know, through commerce that is based on production and the successful sale, the promotion and sale of what it is that you produce. And right now, what we produce in this country is bad debt. And here's this piece out of this morning's wire service talking about how our enlightened masters of the Federal Reserve, in order to get the economy moving again, have authorized these huge new increments of debt, and doing so in a way that results in the inflation of the currency, of course. It begins with the inflation of the currency, and it ends up with the destruction of the spending power of whatever it is that we actually manage to earn through our productive labors. And this is supposedly the oxygen that keeps the economy going. No, it's nothing of the sort. It's the oxygen that's feeding the fire that is burning up whatever it is that we have made and we have managed to save.
And of course, I think that people have to understand that this has happened many times again. It happened in ancient Florence. It happened in ancient Venice. It happened in ancient Greece and ancient Rome. It happened in Germany. It happened in France in 1702 and again in 1789. It happened in the United States when we created the Continental Dollar. And the slogan was, it's as worthless as a continental. And, of course, we saw it in Sydney, and it's going take place in Zimbabwe today, in that regime that we installed there, where today they have $2.5 million, up 2.5% inflation a year. Is that what lies ahead for America? I hope and pray it doesn't. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold for your IRA? That's right. Gold has been available to be placed in IRAs since 1986, yet still, the financial industry refuses to recognize the value of real hard assets for your retirement. The truth be told, gold and silver has outperformed paper investments like stocks, bonds, and CDs, yet no word about IRAs. Perhaps the financial institutions want to maintain control of your assets by keeping you in paper. If you'd like to take a look at gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low return on your paper investments. Call 800-686-2237. Make sure that you secure your future. Call 800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
Through the years of providing water filters to America, you've come to us and we've listened. You asked us to make the water level visible to eliminate the guesswork when refilling the water. We listened. You asked for an elevated base so the system could be used in places beside on the edge of a counter. We listened. You asked us to develop a filter that was made in the USA. We listened. You asked us to include an emergency light for camping and during power outages. We listened. After 9/11, you asked us to develop a filter that was more powerful in removing chemical agents. Again, we listened. Introducing the Berkey Light, the gravity filter requested by America, designed by Americans, and made in America.
Get the Berkey Light, the American water purifier, only $279. Call New Millennium, 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
Have you ever suffered from Giardia, food poisoning, heavy metal poisoning, arthritis, fatigue, or high cholesterol? Maybe you're one of the 75 million Americans that the Center for Disease Control reports is suffering from internal parasites. If so, Freshwater Organics is proud to introduce you to a million-year-old miracle that has been used all over the world by health-conscious individuals seeking alternatives to chemicals and drugs. FPP, or fossilized phytoplankton powder, is a 100% natural, organic product with absolutely no additives. When taken daily, it is an excellent source of natural plant-based silica with 14 trace minerals. Many believe it is a key to a healthy digestive tract. To find an FPP distributor near you, or to buy it now online, go to www.freshwaterorganics.com. You can also call toll-free at 888-949-3570. That's 888-949-3570.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Well, we stand back here at Genesis, and our guest this afternoon, William Grigg. We're talking about the unfortunate situation we find ourselves in, but there's nothing new in history. This has happened time and again whenever anybody has tried a fiat money system. And as the economy begins to wind down and begins to contract, what's the solution? Why we'll print more money? And that's exactly what the Federal Reserve is doing today. And Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae are in trouble. What are we going to do? Why, we're going to give them all the money that they need. We're going to guarantee their bad loans. And we don't know. They have about $5 trillion in loans. How many of them will go bad? We don't know, but an awful lot of them are going to. And, of course, how are they going to finance it? The government doesn't have any money. They're having to borrow a couple of billion dollars a day just to pay their bills. Why don't we just print more money? And it gives you a temporary fix, and then you got to print more money. What's so interesting is the Democrats are suggesting now that that $168 billion they gave people the first of the year, remember everybody got a $600 a check for $600 they go out and spend, and of course, but the economies begin to contract. Well, the solution, let's give the people more money, free money, stimulate the economy. And sooner, and why they're going to have to give more money and more money and more money just to keep the system going, and it's not going to work. It didn't work in ancient Greece. It didn't work in ancient Rome. It didn't work in certainly in Florence or Venice, and it's sure not going to work in America and throughout the world today. So pick up the story there, William.
It's interesting. People like to talk about American exceptionalism, and America is an exceptional nation in many ways, most of them very virtuous, commendable. We are, of course, the first nation in history to be founded on the concept of innate rights that are invested in the individual by a creator, and in the idea that government has derivative and contingent authority, and that the authority that the sovereign people give to government can be withdrawn from the government when it's abused. That's the first time in history, 1775, 76, 1787, when you saw a government created with a conscious limitation on its powers and the consciousness that its powers were subordinate in the scheme of things. So that makes us exceptional. We're exceptional in the sense that for the first time in human history, there was a conscious effort during the formative years of our republic and throughout most of our early history until the 1860s, basically, to retain the forms of a republic and also the rule of law upon which a republic depends. So I think those are great blessings. But when I talk about American exceptionalism of the modern variety, it's more of a conceit than a sense of gratitude, because people seem to think once again that the laws of nature and nature's God, if you will, and the laws of economics, which are a subset of the laws of nature, are somehow not applicable to the United States, that we can uniquely in human history surmount such things as the laws of supply and demand, the laws of sound money, and that's, of course, not an optional circumstance. We don't have any ability to transcend the laws of economics any more than we have the ability to nullify the laws of gravity. And so when people start believing that, once again, the way to prosperity is for the government simply to ex-nihilate new amounts of what they're pleased to call money, people are living in a world of delusion, and they will have no insulation, no protection against the economic consequences of the continued and now, I believe, terminal adulteration of the currency, the dollar, which has not been a dollar in any sense since August of 1971, when our government effectively declared bankruptcy because it would no longer honor the dollar as a reserve note for gold and precious metal. That was done because of the decades previous in which the federal government had been spending far in excess of what it took in revenue and inflating to make up the difference. And, of course, in the 1960s, when you had a war being waged in Southeast Asia and the Great Society welfare state being created and expanded here domestically, the logical consequence of those two things going on at the same time was bankruptcy. And so they effectively declared bankruptcy in 1971 and made some contingent arrangements with the Saudis where the Saudis would continue to accept the dollar in exchange for petroleum as a way of ensuring that people would still accept the dollar and honor it as a viable currency, indeed as the world's reserve currency. Well, we've reached the end of that now, quite frankly. It's gotten to the point where the people who are part of the petrodollar entente are starting to peel away from it, beginning with the Kuwaitis. And, of course, the Iranians no longer accept the dollar, and the regime of Hugo Chavez in Venezuela is no longer willing to accept the dollar. These are all members of OPEC, the same cartel that the Saudis presided over. When a cartel starts to lose its uniformity, it's no longer really an effective cartel. And so as the dollars continue to descend, as it continues to be pushed downward by virtue of the policies being pursued by the Federal Reserve under Ben Bernanke, the time is rapidly approaching when we're no longer going to be able to maintain that fraud.
Well, hold that thought for just a moment. We're going to have to go to a break, but I just wanted to mention it was about 6 weeks to 2 months ago when Alan Greenspan was over talking to a group there in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia and said, to stop your inflation, the only way to do it is to break with the dollar.
Yep.
Why would he say that, knowing full well this could wreak havoc in America? We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Would you like to know how you can use water as fuel and laugh at the rising price of gas? Then keep listening for a very special offer. GasFreedom.info has the information you need to learn about a simple technology you can have right now. GasFreedom is a do-it-yourself, affordable, practical, free energy device. It uses electricity from your car's battery to separate water into a gas called HHO. HHO, also called Brown's gas, burns efficiently and provides the energy your car needs. In just 10 minutes, you'll discover exactly how this is possible. This is the secret the oil and auto industry doesn't want you to know. Go to gasfreedom.info to learn how easy it is to extract energy from water to run your car. During the month of July, visit gasfreedom.info and receive $100 off of your order. Turn any car into a hybrid and laugh all the way to the bank. Visit gasfreedom.info. That's gasfreedom.info. Or call 239-628-3708. That's 239-628-3708. Call today.
Once, America was led by real politicians. Now politicians in the U.S., city, county, state, and federal, are owned and controlled by corporations. We have corporate representatives instead of politicians. Criminal corporate manipulation has caused grain prices to soar to the highest levels in history. Shortages of rice, corn, and wheat now exist in most countries. Natural disasters have put millions worldwide at risk of starvation. Food riots and bread lines occur daily in 30 nations, and not only is that list growing, but it's headed this way. Survival Enterprises are master distributors of the highest quality long-term storage food. Mountain House freeze-dried foods, canned beef, chicken, turkey, butter, bacon, spices, cheese, fruit, and more. We have tons of food in stock now. Call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. Or go to beforeitstoolate.us. That's beforeitstoolate.us, where you'll find what you'll need to keep you and your loved ones secure. And remember, those without food will be servants of those with the food. Call now.
Berkey Security Pack is your one-stop solution for unexpected emergencies. It provides you with purified water, light, power, and communications ability. The Security Pack includes a Berkey Light water purifier, an LED base, two Berkey Sport filtration bottles, the Berkey battery adapter, the Berkey MP solar charger, as well as a backup set of two Black Berkey purification elements. The Berkey Security Pack is important every day and a must during emergencies because it provides purified water, long-term low-energy lighting, backup battery power for your Berkey LEDs, free long-term solar power for communications devices such as radios, walkie-talkies, and cell phones, as well as power for small applications. Get the one-stop solution for your emergency and everyday needs. The Berkey Security Pack, a retail value of $518 for only $399 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Not yet available in Iowa.
Well, Dr. Stan Becker at the Genesis Communication Network, and our guest is, of course, William Grigg. And before we go on, William, why don't you tell our listeners how you can get to your blog spot?
I appreciate that. My blog is called Pro Libertate. That is a Latin expression. It means for freedom. And I try to put something new on that blog every other day, or between 3 and 5 times a week. It all depends upon how my schedule works out. The easiest way to get to the blog is to go to the homepage of the Welch Foundation, which is called The Right Source. And the address for The Right Source is www.rightsourceonline.com. Once again, that's one word, rightsourceonline.com. And if you go to that homepage, at the top, you'll see a banner ad for my new book, which is entitled Liberty in Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State. You can click through to order it there. It can be ordered by way of Amazon.com or through Radio Liberty as well. And then if you scroll down about a third of the way down the first page of The Right Source, look at the left-hand side of the screen, there's a photograph of myself next to a hyperlink that will take you to my blog. That's one way to do it. That's a very easy way to do it, is to go to rightsourceonline.com. A number of people have had success just by typing Pro Libertate into Google, and I believe my blog is probably the first result that turns up. If it cross-indicts that with my name, William Grigg, that's certainly a way to find it as well. And once again, I try to publish something new on that blog 3 to 5 times a week. And the reason why it takes me longer than it takes some other bloggers is because I'm not writing paragraph-length passing reflections on what's going on in the world or republishing things that are written by other bloggers. What I'm trying to do is to devise and research and then publish a research piece between 1,200 and 2,000 words in length that takes the form of an editorial column, but hopefully is substantiated and documented the way that an investigative news report would be presented. And I describe this as investigative polemicism. I think that I shouldn't really take any trouble to disguise my point of view. I'm quite frankly disgusted with what's going on with our financial system. It's a perfectly predictable thing.
Not going to take any calls.
Okay. It's a perfectly predictable thing, but it's just as disgusting for being as predictable. My perspective is one of somebody who believes in and cherishes human liberty and measures government policy and current events in terms of what they do in terms of promoting or frustrating individual liberty. That's why it's called Pro Libertate.
All right, very good, and that's fascinating information. I recommend it to you. So
appreciate
go ahead with the story there.
Well, we were talking before the break about what's going on with the Federal Reserve pumping these new injections of what it calls credit into the economy, and that means, of course, debt. That means that they are inflating once again and thereby destroying the value of those of us who are trying to earn and save. There are, of course, banks that are trying to be austere in lending money, and that austerity is going to be frustrated now by virtue of the fact that they're going to have to go out and compete with banks that are going to be re-lending these new injections of liquidity or what trickles down from the investment markets who are the first beneficiaries of this. And, of course, there are people who are trying to exercise discipline in the management of their own household economies by cutting up credit cards, by trying to pay off their debts and trying to live well within their means right now. Anytime you have an economy in which inflation is let loose to rampage the way that it's going to be rampaging on account of the Federal Reserve's policy, Those of us who practice thrift and austerity are punished, and those who are involved in profligacy live fairly well for as long as they're able to sustain that mode of living. And of course, it's not sustainable indefinitely. But if you take a look at a number of communities in this country, there are already Depression-era landscapes that are being carved out here. There's a really striking example of that that was described by Karen DeCoster, who's a certified public accountant and financial affairs writer, and she lives in a suburb of Detroit. This is how she describes what's been going on in Detroit, which is a thoroughly depressed environment economically right now. She says, here in southeastern Michigan, we got a head start on the rest of you in terms of the Depression. Things look especially bleak here. There are empty strip malls everywhere, especially in the medium to nicer suburbs. There are unfinished strip malls all around where I live. There are half-finished condo and townhouse projects, with the finished phases being 50 to 80% empty, and the rest of the property is four-foot weeds. There are prime pieces of property on the semi-rural north end of the suburbs that are cleared for development, with the home models sitting empty and nothing but acres and acres of weeds filling the land. When I saw that report on LouRockwell.com's blog section, I forwarded that to a friend of mine, and I made note of the fact that about a year and a half or so ago, I said, by this time next year, there's going to be grass growing in the streets of American cities. I sent that to him and said, look, there's grass growing in the streets of American cities. There are communities in California that are so terribly hit, that have been so severely impacted by the downturn here in home prices, that you can see the same kind of things happening in some parts of California, some parts of Ohio, some parts of Georgia. There are parts of Cleveland, the city of Cleveland, for instance, where you have the same circumstances, the same aspect of decay and disrepair that you see here in this excerpt of this blog by Karen DeCoster. But one of the things that's happening as well is that people, having been overextended here in credit in terms of the mortgages they took out, are often walking away from their properties and taking the hit in their credit on the assumption that 5 years from now they'll be able to go out and get another mortgage loan and start over again. The BBC had a piece to that effect describing some of the things that are happening across the country just a couple of days ago, talking about a woman who took out a $500,000 mortgage on an apartment in California in 2006. It's $500,000 to buy an apartment. She and her husband still owe on the $500,000 mortgage, but now the value of that property has declined by 40%. They've lost $200,000 in the subjective value of their home now that the bubble has burst, and so they're simply walking away from their mortgage. And there's a analysis here quoted by Susan Wachter, who's a professor of real estate and finance at the Wharton School of Business, which is a fairly well-regarded institution. She says that the depth of this crisis is really not well appreciated by many people who are watching the real estate market. She said this is the kind of conversation that's going on at cocktail parties and swimming pools, and suddenly this option that is walking away from mortgages, which was truly unthinkable in the past, becomes thinkable. Well, it's because of this that we saw the political pressure to pass this hideously misnamed mortgage bailout bill last Saturday. This was passed by the Senate in a Saturday session. And whenever the Senate manages to rouse itself and do business on a Saturday under exceptional circumstances, they're not doing so because of their zeal to palliate the problems of the middle class. They're doing so in order to serve the interests of the hyper-elite. And the so-called mortgage bailout, which does provide some modest palliatives for people who are overextended in terms of their mortgages, and of course this is something the government should not be doing. It should not be bailing out borrowers or lenders, either big or small. That's something the market should straighten out. But this is camouflage in order to conceal the real point of that bill, which was essentially to nationalize, in principle, Fannie and Freddie, the two big government-chartered mortgage corporations that, as you pointed out, Dr. Stan, have something like $5 trillion in outstanding loans. Almost all of them are probably going to go bad because that was the way that they made their profit margin over the last 10 or 12 years, was by issuing loans to all and sundry and then entering them on their books as assets and using these supposed profits as a way of driving up executive compensation for the officers of Fannie and Freddie. The Washington Post, parenthetically, just I think 2 days ago, had a story about the 100 wealthiest executives who live in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., and almost all of them were out of the financial affairs or mortgage or real estate sector. 10 of the 100 wealthiest executives in the Washington, D.C. suburbs were corporate executives for Fannie and Freddie, which last year showed a $2.5 billion loss. And their compensation, for the most part, was tied up in performance bonuses. In reading that, I commented to my wife that, good grief, if losing $2.5 or $3 billion will earn you a performance bonus of $10 or $12 million over the course of the year, then give me that job. I'm sure I could manage to lose $2.5 billion in a year if I had that kind of incentive to do so.
I mean, they have an incentive. Maybe they'll lose $1 trillion. Then there's really got to be
more. Yeah. I mean, if that's how you're going to make your money, then by all means, just start making great big bonfires out of the stuff, which is sort of what's been going on. But Fannie and Freddie have, as you point out, $5 trillion in loans outstanding. What's happened is that the Secretary of the Treasury, thanks to this bill that was passed on Saturday, then signed in ignominious silence this morning in the White House. No signing ceremony, no great self-congratulatory pageantry accompanied this particular bailout. What's happened is the Secretary of the Treasury is going to have the power to extend an unlimited credit line to Fannie and Freddie and to invest as much as he sees fit in terms of buying up ownership in Fannie and Freddie, up to and including the possibility of nationalizing them outright. I don't see where there is any logical stopping place between where we are right now and the outright nationalization of Fannie and Freddie, which, of course, would completely destroy the shareholders in Fannie and Freddie, but lead to the great benefit of the bondholders of those two mortgage institutions. Right at the top of that list, of course, are the princeling class in communist China, the people who bought up the largest share of foreign ownership in Fannie and Freddie, or people from Beijing. And so it's a situation where the taxpayers in the United States are going to be hit up either through direct taxation or through inflation, more likely the second or some combination of the two, in order to enrich our corrupt corporate elite here in the United States and their corresponding members overseas, including over in communist China. And this is all something which is written into this huge bailout measure that basically alienates from the Congress to the executive branch, the Secretary of the Treasury, and presumably the President would be part of this decision, these decisions as to how much of the public money will be spent on bailing out these two nominally private mortgage corporations, Fannie and Freddie.
But, William, of course, the thing is that they do not specify how much of the public money will be spent. It is a blank check.
Yeah.
Now, you're talking about the potential for hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars.
Yeah.
That is what's so incredible about this. And where is the outcry? I heard of one senator, in fact, I think we have a clip posted up on our website. This one senator is saying to Paulson, look, you're not going to be here next year. You're not going to have to, you know, live with the results of what you're suggesting. But,
yeah.
I mean, where is the money coming from? Tell me, Mr. Paulson, where is the money coming from?
Yeah,
and here's
the
man who is the Secretary of Treasury, former CEO
of Goldman Sachs,
saying he is frankly stammering. I was almost embarrassed for him.
Yeah, well,
because he knows where the money is coming
from. Henry Paulson is a really interesting study, because if you take a look at still photographs of the guy when the economy is being discussed, his face is usually frozen in these expressions of incredulous horror. I mean, he is somebody who is by no means the great poker face. He's not exactly a practitioner of stoicism. And when he's caught in these implausible contradictions, he does stammer and gibber and become visibly nervous. And that's because he knows, I believe, that the game is transparent to anybody who's following it with any degree of assiduity or knows what's going on in terms of the larger economic picture. You know, he can't fool the people who really understand what's going on. Unfortunately, there are relatively few of those people around. But the thing about this bailout and the question of where is this money going to come from, it's going to come from the same place all the other money comes from. It's going to be created out of nothing.
Right.
And it's going to be created by stealing the value of what we earn and what we try to save, by redistributing the value of our work into the hands of people who are politically connected. And the other part of this equation that has to be pointed out, you mentioned that Paulson's not going to be there next year. Who knows whether or not he will be there next year? Assuming that Barack Obama is elected president this fall, it's by no means an insignificant thing that he just met with Ben Bernanke, and he has conferred his blessing on Ben Bernanke as exemplifying the policies that he, Obama, would like to continue, assuming that he is elected president. So there'll be continuity here between Bush and whoever is elected this fall. There's no doubt McCain would follow in Bush's train, because McCain is even more ignorant of the economy than George W. Bush has proven to be, and indifferent to it. I mean, McCain's entire desire, essentially, is to start up a war with Iran and make sure that we're entangled in wars throughout the world for the next several generations. Obama doesn't yield to McCain one whit in terms of his endorsement of the warfare agenda, but Obama has signaled that he would be very much in bed with the same corporatist and investment banker community that has helped to help to bring about the state of affairs.
I think one of the more important things is for our listeners to understand that the president or the chairman of the Federal Reserve System in many ways is far more powerful than the president of the United States. In fact, Freddie, of course, there is where the real power is. George Bush is simply a puppet. He would not dare defy other people who control the financial affairs. In fact, we have this one letter we found in Colonel House's papers where Franklin Delano Roosevelt is writing to Colonel House back in 1933 and saying, as you and I both know, Colonel, why, of course, financial interests and large centers have controlled the government of the United States since the days of Andrew Jackson, and I'm not specifically excluding WW, meaning Woodrow Wilson.
Yes.
They understand. If anybody wants to see that letter, we have a copy of it, we make it available, it's in many of our syllabuses. You must understand that the president is not in control. He is simply there, and he serves at their discretion, and if he gets out of line, well, they send him for a trip to Dallas. People say this could not be how the system works. Well, you don't want to believe this is how the system works, but that's really what it is. Why is Obama going to visit Bernanke? He's checking with the people who run things. Believe me, Bernanke, of course, is simply subservient to the real powers of the world, and just as Alan Greenspan was.
It's more a matter of Obama being vetted by Bernanke, if there's any vetting going on here. And, of course, the presidential candidates who pass the muster of these two retail outlets for the same wholesale political establishment, the Republicans and Democrats being almost entirely fungible in every significant way, the presidential candidates who make it to this phase of the election process are, as to use the word once again, they're fungible would-be figureheads for the same ruling oligarchy. And the thing that I find remarkable is that for all his nattering, his incessant, insipid nattering about change, Obama is very much visibly and obviously a creature of the same corporatist investment banker community that has been running things. If you take a look at the roster of people who are pouring money into his campaign, you don't raise $32 million as quickly and as effortlessly as Obama recently did in the form of small donations, particularly when you're talking about such a severe economic downturn. People are not pouring money. Little people, little households are not pouring money into Obama's campaign. What's happened is that the same interests are pouring money into his campaign as poured money into George W. Bush's campaign 8 or 9 years ago, beginning in 1998, actually, when he started creating his own little shadow government. Bush started raising money, so it was about 10 years ago in anticipation of the 2000 election. But they are, once again, people who would be, if elected to the presidency, merely the face of a pretty much semi-permanent oligarchy that's partially submerged and which has been very much part of the process of creating the architecture of the financial system that is now starting to disintegrate around us. Now, what's really going to be interesting...
William, I'm going to have to interrupt you here because we're out of time. But, however, Rick will be with us again on Friday evening at 9 o'clock program. Bye-bye. We'll look forward to talking
Take
to
care.
You
there.
Are terrorist cells or prime terror targets located near you? Where are military bases and hazardous waste sites located? How do you find the best area for solar, average rainfalls, fish contamination advisories, and major transportation routes? In the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA, you will find the information you want with over 50 interactive parameters that you control. Find everything from housing prices and taxes to brewing environmental catastrophes. Locate billion-dollar disaster-prone areas, the safest cities, ideal solar locations, and much, much more. Complete with over 3 gigabytes of detailed information, on each of the 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high-resolution, full-color maps and full-color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis that you need. Get this hard-to-find information by ordering Prudent Places USA now for only $29 plus shipping and handling by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
Every week, thousands of violent crimes are committed. Don't let yourself become a statistic. Be smart. Be safe. Trust pepper spray instead of your luck. PepperSpray.com is the only website you'll ever need for all of your non-lethal self-defense supplies. PepperSpray.com carries one of the largest assortments of pepper spray and personal safety products on the web. From big to small, we have it all. Pepper spray, mace, animal repellents, stun guns, and tasers. PepperSpray.com also carries a large assortment of products for personal, home, child, and pet safety. PepperSpray.com has great news for outdoor enthusiasts. Now you can protect yourself against possible animal attacks with safe, humane animal repellents. Featuring counter-assault bear deterrent and mace brand animal repellent. Enter radio in the coupon box and you'll receive 10% off your order. So what are you waiting for? Go to PEPPERSpray.com. That's PepperSpray.com or call 1-800-908-9988 today.
Have you made preparations to look after yourself and your family in case there's a national emergency or a terrorist attack? Well, I want to tell you that the government's looking after their people. In fact, plans have been made to protect people of high-ranking position in government, but they're not making any preparations for the average individual, so you're going to have to look after yourself. If you'd like information on long-term food storage, if you'd like information on the other items you would need in case of a national emergency, why don't you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 and ask for the emergency food catalog. We'll get it right off to you and we'll get the items shipped directly from Ready Reserve Foods. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You're going to have to begin making preparations to look after yourself. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network. Now, if you'd like, of course, to get the book written by William Grigg, it's called Liberty and Eclipse. Why, you can get it by calling our ministry at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get Lindsay Williams' DVD, one he actually put out earlier this year, why, of course, it's you can get that. It's called The Energy Non-Crisis. It's a DVD of Lindsay's views. We also have a four-tape set called The Oil Deception. If you really want to understand why the price of oil has gone up so dramatically, you'll want to get this. And, of course, if you want to get our most recent interview with Lindsay Williams, you'll know why the price is coming down now. That, if you want to get our interview with Jim Tucker, who tells you that when the Bilderbergers met early in June, they decreed that the price of oil would come down. And so, suddenly, this was decided ahead of time. It had nothing to do with the law of supply and demand. It has to do with the people who rule the world. Certainly, we've got a great deal of great information out here. We have a book called Genetic Roulette, Jeffrey Smith. It's called Genetic Roulette. We really recommend this book. We've got AIDS, The Crime Beyond Belief by Don Scott, going into how they engineered the AIDS epidemic, and they're killing so many people in Africa, as we've told you in the past. In Botswana, where, of course, the U.S. Commerce Department is down there actually monitoring the epidemic, and we have the figures. Why is the U.S. Commerce Department in Botswana monitoring the AIDS epidemic? Why, we want to see what a good job we're doing there. And 46% of the pregnant women are HIV infected, and they're all going to die. Great job. Great job if you believe in genocide. But that's exactly what is being funded by your tax money today. And certainly, you really need to understand, of course, the one-child policy in China was largely financed by the United States through International Planned Parenthood. We gave the money to the people who supervised the one-child policy and similar genocidal policies throughout the world. And you really need to get my interviews with Stephen Mosier, and we're carrying his book on population control. A Real Cost or Illusionary Benefits. It's $32.95, but it's an excellent book. We carry the book, The Ron Paul Revolution. And then, of course, we've got a book by Dr. Sherry Tenpenny saying no to vaccines, and then a great new book on Lyme disease, the 10 top Lyme disease treatments. And we also have a book on autism and Lyme disease. Oh, you didn't think they were related? Yes, I'm afraid that they are. They've targeted our children. They're going to destroy as many of them as they can. And who are they? Well, of course, you need to get my Brotherhood of Darkness book or my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness available on DVD, or you can actually watch it on our website at RadioLiberty.com. You need to get my talk on the forbidden knowledge and the syllabus that goes with that. My new talk on secret knowledge. And then, of course, you want to get the Planned Police State, and the syllabus goes with that, which I think is excellent. So again, the books are AIDS, The Crime Beyond Belief, Genetic Roulette by Jeffrey Smith, and it really goes into the genetically manufactured food that's being used to destroy our health and destroy our children, The Lyme Autism Connection by Brian Rosner, Population Control by Stephen Mosier, The Ron Paul Revolution. This is simply put together on Ron Paul's speeches. Saying No to Vaccines by Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. And then includes a DVD. And then the Top 10 Lyme Disease Treatments by Brian Rosner. Well, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like some wonderful music, you can certainly get the music by Newell Oler, which we have. I think it's the most wonderful and beautiful restful music. We recommend it to you. In contrast to so much what's going on, of course, we have our new 4-tape or 4-CD sets, The Execution of Martin Luther King and Prozac. The other SSRI drugs are the panacea plague. They're a plague. We'll be right back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
Hello, folks. Alex Jones.